A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O,
P, Q, R, S, T. Hello and welcome to PQRST, Parody Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. And if you were paying any sort of attention just now, you might have realized that I didn't sing the ABC song to kick us in. Somebody has invaded the podcast for this week. Say hello, friend.
Ooh, hello. Take me to your podcast leader.
So, welcome, a big PQRSD welcome to Adam Nedesai, my friend of many years working at the TV station together, the guy who I would try to come up with a Simpsons quote to make crack up as I walked past him in the hall. The guy
and
that
succeed
I
succeed many, many times.
The guy that I got in trouble unintentionally making a quote while I was assistant directing that he laughed at while he was running camera and making the talent look at him strangely.
I still remember that joke. It's
I still feel terrible about that. It was a good joke, I'm not going to lie. But the fact that, yeah, that we distracted the show talent was not what I was shooting for.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Anyway, how the heck are you?
I am good. I come in peace.
Fantastic.
To this show.
Now, the reason why, I mean, we've been looking for an excuse to do a project together for a while, just like Barney and Linda Ronstadt. Oh, another Simpsons reference. But the reason why we're doing this today...
We'll not discuss which one is which.
The reason why we're doing this today is I just got the very distinct honor of being on Adam's podcast, which is called...
The True Myth Podcast.
And
just try to suss out the... threads of truth, either in terms of spirituality or in just common humanity and the different myths that we tell.
And we had just had a long conversation about stand-up comedy, which is a subject I'm very fond of. And those that are interested in hearing more just because they love the sound of my voice or because they are going to grow to love the sound of yours, where would they go to find your podcast?
The best place at this point is just go to YouTube and type in True Myth Podcast. And they'll come up there. At some point in the future, I'm sure I'll be tech-savvy enough to get them up on iTunes. But that day is not today.
I can describe the process if you want. I will say YouTube videos and Googling were very helpful in making that happen. Those of you who are interested, go to YouTube and this, the True Myth Podcast.
Yes.
You will get to see, there's a visual that goes along with each episode that I'm not even going to tell you what it is. I'll let you go and see it. But it's a treat for the eyes, individual to each podcast, which I have mad respect for Adam for putting that together every time. And so those of you that just know my voice can see what I look like, which, hey, that's just a fun experience for everybody. So on today's episode, you didn't know I was going to do this. I'm just throwing this at you, but... Parody Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. Do you have a rant on your mind? Anything happened lately that you'd like to just get off your chest?
My default rant is about why in this day and age we still have trains running through the middle of town and why we allow them to run through town during rush hour. That's my default rant. That's the one my wife's heard many a time.
Considering the A-line... took out a van, I think, within the last 36 hours. It's fairly topical. You can rant away.
Well, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's not cost effective to reroute trains or, you know, you reroute a train and then the city grows and whatever. But, I mean, we have the technology for bridges.
Yeah.
We've cracked that code. So, you know, I don't know why we have to. And then, okay, trains have to run. I get that. I appreciate how... you know, we get produce and things from trains, but can they run at night? Do they have to run at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when we're trying to get up to 87? Yeah.
Well, people, if they run
it's
at three,
not a good rant.
If they run at 3 o'clock in the morning and you live within, you know, half a mile of it, that might not be fun for.
Yes, but I suppose, but the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. I would rather it not run at 5 o'clock and run at three.
Well, as long as we're ranting about trains, I didn't have a rant prepared, but this is excellent. Last week, I had gone to reasonable trouble to get my wife and I on the ski train up to Winter Park to celebrate our anniversary. I mean, we had somebody watching our child for the better part of the day. I'd gotten tickets. We slogged through rush hour traffic, and the train leaves at 8:05. We walk into Union Station at 8:01. I would have loved to have been there earlier, but that's just how it worked out, and found that they locked the doors at 8 o'clock. And nothing in the literature, the person I talked to on the phone, nobody told me that there was a deadline for getting to Union Station and getting your tickets. And anyway, we had a good day anyway, and we'll try again possibly next year. But I think trains are terrible, and I can't say I don't like them. I love trains, but some trains are on my list. Let's just say it that way.
You know, if there is anybody out there listening to your podcast who owns a train line and they want to change our minds, I'm sure we would be very open to riding the rails as gentlemen used to.
I have a hat. My wife got me a fedora for my anniversary, so I think you need one to ride the rails, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. I was really missing the
gentlemen, train connection. As gentlemen used to. Guys used to wear hats.
Okay,
why don't you?
Okay.
Can't read my mind and know what I'm talking
about? Okay. That's actually a thing I was going to bring up, because in the I was listening to the War of the Worlds audiobook by H.G. Wells.
Ooh, nice segue.
Have you said which movie we're talking about?
It's going to be War of the Worlds. So,
all right,
like I say, excellent segue there.
In War of the Worlds, I only got a couple chapters in, but the guy sees the cylinder from Mars crash into Earth, and he's another guy's looking at it, and he's getting freaked out. He thinks there's humans on the inside who are burning to death, and so he runs into town to get help. And it describes his interactions with these different citizens that refuse to help him, that find him crazy, and it lists one or two reasons why he's appears crazy to them, and one of them is, and he wasn't wearing a hat. So this is written back into the times when if you weren't wearing a hat, you were crazy.
Yeah.
And not a gentleman that they would let ride on a train.
It really was a thing, and frankly, it's one that I'm glad is not a thing anymore, because I'm not a big fan of hats, but maybe they have their uses, but I wouldn't want to be considered crazy if I was in public and I wasn't wearing one. So, the War of the Worlds. What was your first experience with the story in any way, shape, or form?
Let's see. I knew of it well before the 2005 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Probably interacting somehow with it. Did an NPR or something like that play the War of the Worlds broadcast every October 30th or 31st?
That sounds right. Yeah, them or KVOD. And I had heard about Orson Welles scaring, you know, the Eastern Seaboard with the radio broadcast. I've never actually heard that broadcast, but I can believe it.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I used to listen to it every couple of years on that date, just, you know, for fun. It's great.
And it shows the power of media, really does.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never heard the broadcast. I did have the book as a child, and when I read it, I was probably a little too young to appreciate it, because what I recall remembering is that it was really dry and didn't hold my attention very well, and not enough car chases.
In a time where we've seen science fiction before.
Right. And at the same, in this similar era, I was reading, you know, Star Wars novelizations. And compared to Star Wars, War of the Worlds is kind of slow moving.
Mm.
But, you know, it's written in a very different time. I recall thinking that the ending where the, and if you haven't seen the movie, go see the movie and then come back to this because I'm about to spoil it. The ending where the aliens are dead because of the common cold, that nothing mankind can do will stop them, but they get the flu bug and they die. I remember that thinking that was fairly clever. So, fast forward to the movie, and we'll get into what I thought of the movie, but they do at least take that from the book, that's the thing that kills off the aliens. And as I was walking out of the theater, a guy behind me, I overheard him, he's like, boy, that's stupid, they were killed by a cold? And I just remember thinking that, well, that was how it was in the book, and maybe the guy wasn't very well read, and maybe he thought there weren't enough car chases in the actual film. But it amazes me that this movie made it onto the top 50 grossing movies of all time.
The 2005 edition.
Yeah. My list comes from 2010, which is when I wrote the book series. And I just took the 50 top grossing movies of all time. Number 50 was King Kong. not the original, but the Jack Black remake. And there were some, like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that I refused to watch again. And so I substituted Raiders that particular week. But War of the Worlds, it's, how did this end up on the, why did people go back to see this over and over and over again? In my humble opinion, it's not a great movie. It doesn't work as a really tight alien. It's not that scary so that I think people would go back again. It's not that action-y. It's not that much of anything. So, and as I watched it through to look for nits, I kept reminding myself, why did this make so much money?
I mean, do you think it was people coming back to see it, or do you think it hit enough of, like, a broad enough audience that more people than just science fiction fans, and more people than just Tom Cruise fans, and more people than just Steven Spielberg fans, like, just kind of hit this Venn diagram of a whole bunch of different cross-sections of people went to see this one movie once?
I guess maybe it hit in, on a blockbuster level. I guess that must have been. But I feel like there were other blockbusters that were better and didn't make this list. I'm trying to remember.
Well, this was right after Minority Report, too, where Tom Cruise and Spielberg teamed up on a movie that I thought was certainly much better than this one.
I would agree. Yeah, and that was a better movie. A lot more to watch, a lot more interesting. The title, I still maintain, is one of the dumbest ever, but at least a lot more to see. But that didn't make this top list. I'll never understand the movie going public, I think, is mainly what I'm saying.
So, I don't know that anybody does.
Yeah,
I
mean, if they did, there wouldn't be so many bad movies out.
Or maybe that's why there's so many bad movies out, because somebody knows more about the movie going public broadly than we'd like to admit.
So, do you have? Did you see the movie? Did you have anything, you know, impressions you wanted to throw into this very well illustrated podcast?
Yeah, I mean, are you going to go kind of through the timeline of events, or do you just want to throw things out there?
Whatever makes sense, and we could hit a timeline. I have my notes in front of me, but
sure,
whatever you want to talk about.
Well, I would like to say that on the aliens part, dying because of the, you know, bacteria in the water and the so forth. Whenever you go to another country, what's rule one? You don't drink
the
water.
Don't drink the water.
Even dumb, maggoty humans know that. You know, and if these are like the most intelligent beings who have mastered intergalactic space travel, and they come here, and what are they doing? They're chugging the water. And they're not even chugging water out of the faucets. They're drinking the drainage runoff in the guy's basement.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're going to die. Your species is going to die.
Well, in the aliens' defense, we do know that, but we know that because of long, hard lessons. And
right?
I this is very random, but there's a really, really great book called... Wild at Heart is a really great book, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. Doggone it. The book was written about Chris McCandless, who went into the wild, sorry, is the book I want. And
he
goes off into the Alaskan bush to live off the land, and he dies out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people that were like, oh, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't have enough respect for the land. And the author, John Krakauer, and I will read anything he puts to paper, said, okay, yeah, you guys may have a point, but he was more prepared than a lot of people know, and he just made one mistake too many. And so in the aliens' defense, they were doing a pretty good job of destroying all of mankind, and maybe they just made one mistake too many, which was, you know, not bringing any emergency along with them.
Will, are you picking my nit?
Yes.
I mean, you brought me on here to pick nits, and I'm picking nits, and now you're picking my nit, picking nit?
Do you not understand the point of the podcast? See, that audience, the sounds
yes,
you're
yes,
hearing right now is the sound of someone's eyes being opened. It's a beautiful thing.
The nuance that H.G. Wells gives to the motivations of the aliens is a lot, well, it's a lot more nuanced than presented in the movie. He kind of, you know, it's a survival thing. He kind of equates them to some of our mistakes and things like that, making them at least more understandable in their motivations as opposed to just these...
you know, I'll bite. I don't remember what was the motivation in the movie. In the book.
Oh, in the movie, he quotes the line that they looked at our planet with greedy eyes.
Ah.
See, I think I even copied the quote.
It was some sort of expansion thing.
I can't remember if they said that their planet was dying or not, but...
Sure.
You know that old chestnut.
Well, let's see. Before we get too far into the movie, what I will do, and audience, I'm going to show you a little glimpse behind the curtain here. I print out the pages from the book, and then I go through what I've written down, and I star the things that I think might be interesting to listen to on a podcast. I don't generally share all of the, like, oh, the person had their hand to their face, and then the next shot, their hand was by their side sort of things, unless there's something funny in there. And so the first thing that I put a star by, 10 minutes and 23 seconds, the movie has established that Ray is a terrible, terrible father, and he only sort of pays attention to his kids, and he's trying to play catch with Robbie, and Ray throws apparently too hard. Robbie doesn't catch it, and the ball breaks the window. Robbie walks away. We see a very artistic shot by the director looking through the hole at Ray, and it's a very different hole than the one that was just broken. If you look at the one that the ball made, and then you look at the one we're looking through, and basically I'm like, how many broken windows does this house have? This is ridiculous.
This has clearly happened before.
I guess, yeah.
My guess is the Tom Cruise probably broke a window on the day, and then the window that they shot the camera through took the art department 35 hours. It cost $10,000 to get just the right crack lines that they wanted to shoot.
Oh, movies don't work like that. At 12 minutes and 30 seconds, I wasn't a father when I wrote this. I am now, but I still maintain this may not be a nit because we've established Ray is a terrible father. The adorable at the time Dakota Fanning as Rachel tells her dad that he should get TiVo and mentions that her stepfather got it for her room. Apparently her stepfather isn't a great father either, because any father, I'm sorry, I don't care if you're out there and you think I'm wrong, any father that lets a 9-year-old have their own television is not a good father. I'm just going to put that out there.
That's not me. My child is 3 and he has his own TV, so he's not 9, so I'm still a good dad.
Yeah, so, well, if they turn 9 and it's still
the
case.
I'm kidding. He doesn't have his TV. He doesn't have a TV, but still. Yeah. Yeah, Tom Cruise. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure we'll get to it, but that is something I wanted to ask you, though, because it is interesting to watch movies before. I saw this movie for the first time before I had kids.
And me too.
Then watching it again in preparation for this podcast. Yeah, it's not a great movie, but some of the stuff between Tom Cruise and his son, specifically towards the end where he's having to let his son go, spoiler alert.
oh, don't get me started on the son. Oh, we'll get to that. It did it.
Okay.
Well, no, I'm glad that it got to you, and I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is, oh my gosh, Robbie is dead, and then is he really? But again, we'll get to that, because that's one of my biggest complaints about this movie is the bait and switch that they pull. But yeah, one of the reasons I don't enjoy this movie is that he's such a bad father, and I don't feel like he does a lot to redeem himself by the end of the movie, that he turns it around, that he's a mildly less bad father by the end. But I will say that I only watched this, I saw it once in theaters, and I watched it again to nitpick it around 2010. I haven't seen it since. So my eyes in looking at it might be a little different now that I actually have a child.
Tom Cruise's performance was it was like he was charming Tom Cruise, and he was the character of the bad father.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem like they ever found the way for both of those to mesh into one character. He was either playing one character or the other.
Yeah.
Charming Tom Cruise or Tom Cruise the bad father. And, yeah, I didn't feel... It's kind of my thought with the movie itself as a whole. They wanted to do kind of a similar sci-fi throwback movie, but also a present-day action flick. And I think people can hold two things in a movie or in a performance well, and I didn't feel that the execution of the movie nor of Tom Cruise's performance held those two things well at the same time.
Yeah, it's not a great action movie, and it's not a great sci-fi movie. They went for both, and I don't think they hit either target.
I love the poster, though.
Of the one shot? I will have to look that up. I don't even remember what it looked like.
it's got the world, and it's got a big tentacly alien hand kind of coming up from the bottom. It looked like one of those old, you know, paperback sci-fi novels.
Yeah, that's right, and that was a nice touch. But this movie needed more. 13 minutes, 31 seconds. Tom Cruise's character Ray is like, "Hey, where'd Robbie go?" And Rachel is like, "What was it with the R names?" Anyway, Rachel's like, "Oh, he just took your car and left." And so Ray runs outside. Now, I could imagine, as a dad, him checking the driveway to see if Rachel's telling him the truth. But then he runs into this. What is he planning on doing? Running around New York to try to find his son? I will say one of the ways that this movie influenced my life is this might have been the first time I saw somebody cool wearing a leather jacket and a hoodie. And I have since worn the leather jacket hoodie combination many times. I'm not sure I look as cool as Tom Cruise, but I at least look more cool than I used to when I didn't wear a leather jacket and a hoodie.
Well, as long as you aspire to be a better father than he is in this movie, it'll equal it out. So.
That's a very low bar. I think I've cleared it already, frankly. 1616, maybe because the aliens are causing it, that's why the lightning sounds the way it does, which is not that impressive. Because if it's supposed to be real lightning or anything approximating it, I was filming a thunderstorm once, and lightning struck maybe a quarter mile away from where I was standing. And it didn't sound swoopy and effecty like this lightning. It was just a regular thunderclap, although very loud and like almost exactly right with the lightning. Scared the crap out of me, too, which is mainly the reason why I tell that story, is because, you know, I know from real lightning.
Are the lightning bolts supposedly coming from a mothership or coming from Mars itself? Or
I don't know. It's one of those many things that's like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense.
Because the news anchor shows the footage where they kind of go frame by frame, and you see the little capsule coming down the lightning beam into the ground, lightning bolt, I guess, into the ground, and that's how they get to their ships, which were buried for thousands of years before we had pavement technology.
Yes,
why didn't they wipe us out then if they wanted our planet?
Or, I mean, it's skipping ahead slightly, but I actually gave that the Will Award, that at 24 minutes and 51 seconds, these huge, enormous alien machines burst out of the ground. They've been buried there for hundreds of years, and nobody has ever noticed. I mean, they put a sewer system in here and a subway, and these hugantic machines are just like, nope, they don't know we're here. I found that very hard to swallow. Mm-hmm. But earlier, after the lightning has stopped and Ray wanders outside, he passes an auto shop where the mechanic tells him that the starter is fried. So I tried changing it, and that didn't help. There have been like 3 minutes, maybe five, since all this started, and you're telling me you had time enough to discover the starter was dead and change it in 5 minutes? I don't know from auto mechanics, so maybe that's possible, but I'm saying this guy deserves a lot of business.
I don't know how much of a grease monkey you are, Will, but Tom Cruise tells him to change the solenoids. What is a solenoid?
I don't even know, but apparently...
It sounded made up to me. My dad's a mechanic, but I'm not good at it.
Cars have solenoids, and so I guess it's a thing, as opposed to like the Johnson bar. That's just something that's made up. But yeah, that's a later nit, too, is like how this mechanic can't get the car running, and Ray wanders along and says, "Hey, do this," and suddenly, oh, well, that just fixes everything.
Well, but I don't understand is if the solenoids went bad when they were in the car, so you replace them with new solenoids, apparently solenoids in a cardboard box
are
not
safe
affected by whatever EMP.
The alien lightning.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this happens in movies a lot, too. At 2116, the asphalt is buckling and these huge cracks appear, so something underneath is moving. And the onlookers just slowly back away.
Right, yeah.
If I'm ever on a street and the asphalt starts cracking, I'm not doing anything slowly.
Right. or backing away 5 feet and then waiting.
Yeah. Later, a building has started cracking. People still aren't running. The cops have to actually tell them to back up. In that same scene, Ray runs alongside the street as it's cracking. Not away from it, not over, just alongside of it.
All of the forces of nature and alien in this movie are excellent at hitting everything around Tom Cruise.
Yes. That comes
every
up a lot.
Every person around Tom Cruise turns to dust, yeah.
How lucky a son of a gun he is that everybody gets turned to dust. But let's look at that whole turning to dust thing. Are the aliens just out to have some fun? Because 6 billion people. How long does it take to turn 6 billion people into dust one laser bolt at a time?
Right, right.
It just does not seem like a very effective plan of world domination.
Well, and then later in the movie, they're using us as fertilizer. So did they just kind of figure that out on the fly? Oh, hey, these guys are great when you use them as fertilizer. Let's do that instead of this dust thing.
And I think that might have been in the book, too, and that's just so gross. I guess it makes sense, but it's nasty.
I just don't get the change in plan there.
It's amazing that Ray and his family managed to find the one vehicle that is working in all of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that the aliens don't blow up the only vehicle that happens to be moving. I think is really lucky. It's also nice of the drivers on the freeway to leave just enough room for the minivan to get through.
You don't get that clear of a path when people are in the cars conscious.
I completely agree. And again, this happens in movies. I love how you'll be 10 minutes into a chase scene and all of a sudden people are putting their seatbelts on. It's like, was there nothing in the last, that we went through that fruit stand? You didn't put a seatbelt on before that happened? So at 34 minutes and 13 seconds, I know Ray's not a good father, but considering the circumstances, he might have his precious little daughter put a seatbelt on. Oh, man. Let's see. Since I haven't seen the movie in a while, apparently they flee the city and then they take shelter somewhere.
They go to his ex-wife and her husband's house.
That's right.
A little further out of town.
Yeah. Well, at 3852, they're hiding in the basement, and this white light is coming in, I guess from the aliens. And the light beam is really visible because smoke is drifting past the window on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering why they lit a campfire, is all I'm saying. Or maybe they just don't dust down here very often.
He couldn't figure out the fancy-dancy thermostat in the house, so he just broke up a couple of dining room chairs. Ray's a problem solver, Will.
Yes. Like I say, I don't mention a lot of the continuity things, but at 39 minutes, 58 seconds, because I think this one is funny, Rachel runs out from under the stairs to hug her brother. The shot changes here, and a frame later, you see Ray and Robbie and Rachel is not there. And then the next shot, she's clinging to her brother again. So apparently she was abducted, and the aliens decided, oh, she's far too annoyingly cute. Let's give her back. Between the shots.
If Spielberg had the money, he could write a sequel that would explain that. That's what I think is interesting about all these Star Wars things.
Yeah.
Is the longer the universe gets to go, any of those things that were just a mistake in making a film, you can now write some sort of side story to explain that. That's got to be a gift.
As much as I didn't like the prequels, I did appreciate how Lucas made Jango Fett clumsy to justify the fact that a stormtrooper in A New Hope smacks his head against the doorway.
Right, right.
It's like, hey, the clones have this imminent clumsy thing going on. I could appreciate that. And listeners, when I get to A New Hope, more nitpicking about George Lucas trying to explain the Kessel Run and parsecs making sense rather than just owning up to the fact that he made a mistake. He goes on for like 5 minutes about, no, it's not a mistake. This is what I mean.
Yeah, parsec is a measurement of distance, not time, something like that.
Yeah. Now, the aliens have been disintegrating people, and here we see Rachel at a river, 4832, and all these dead bodies start floating by. When did they... I guess it's not necessarily a nit, but I'm not sure why the aliens decided to just change up tactics suddenly. Or else this is just
a river.
Really nasty part of town that, oh, the people, the bodies in the river, that doesn't have anything to do with the aliens. It's just Detroit, man.
I mean, this is a little gross, but, since they are using us as fertilizer, maybe it's like when we shoot logs down a river, they're just putting the fertilizer down, sending it down the river to the processing plant.
Can you come back and do all of these podcasts? Because I never would have thought of that.
I think so. We're past the point where they were at the ex-wife's house. But if my big nit that
please.
I was screaming to my wife about. Okay, so it's established that he has his kids periodically enough that he has a room set for them, and enough that the wife comments, "Aren't they a little old to be sharing a room?" So
yeah.
They've been staying with their dad periodically for an extended period of their lives. In that mom's house, he starts making them a peanut butter sandwich.
Right.
And she says, "Dad, I'm allergic to peanut butter." And he says, Since when?
Yeah.
And she says, "Birth." Now, I can get, if aliens are attacking, that someone might forget. I mean, it's a pretty big allergy to forget. You know, a lot of people have some bad stuff happen with peanut allergies. But I can get a lapse. You know, but then she brings it up, and then you're like, since when? Yeah, he's a really bad dad.
I think we've established that. I agree. I can't believe I didn't write that one down as a nip.
Now that I've said that, I'm sure I'm going to forget something critical with my children today. You know, so that God can remind me, hey, slow your roll there, pal. Stop being a jerk.
Does God say slow your roll? I guess he could, but I don't think I've ever heard him say that.
That's in the original Greek.
Thou shalt sloweth thy roll. It got a laugh in the theater. It is a funny moment, 50 minutes, 55 seconds, when the radio says, this is a test of the emergency broadcast system. And it's like, of all the times to not actually be able to hear the emergency broadcast. But there's the nip. Why aren't they broadcasting anything? And since this radio only got static before, how are they getting a signal at all? Mm-hmm. Now, to be serious, or at least attempt to be for a moment, at 52 minutes into the movie, we see the mob descend on the minivan.
Yeah.
And I wrote this in the podcast review, or the podcast, in the nitpicking in the book. Nothing in the entire movie is as frightening to me as the way the mob of people takes over that minivan.
Oh, sure.
Because I'm really not buying the whole aliens from outer space thing. I think it's goofy, but the way a mob of people can behave, they did a really good job filming that, and mm-hmm. it's scary as hell, because that sort of thing happens, and it can happen, and just mobs.
It's almost like a zombie movie.
A little bit, yeah, and that's the way people can be, though. So this sort of thing, I don't believe I'm ever going to have to run from aliens, but oof.
Well, I think that like The Walking Dead and the zombie shows, I don't particularly care for zombie shows. Just,
me neither.
You know, my own personal squeamishness.
But yeah.
I think the fear about zombies is just kind of what we may or it may experience or fear that we'll experience. Just the something familiar, something trusted, then turn like a person familiar and trusted turning.
Yeah.
And becoming, you know, dead inside or proven distrustful or whatever. And that was a terrifying concept that I think is played out in zombies. And it was terrifying in that scene, just, you know, your fellow humans then becoming the aggressors.
Yeah.
There's a Twilight Zone, I think, that plays on that really well, where I think a small town hears rumors or a radio broadcast or something about aliens, and then they start turning on each other.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe you're the alien, maybe you're, you know, and it kind of descends into that mob stuff. So.
And that's, yeah, people can be really, really scary. Much more so than aliens, at least in this particular movie.
The greatest, what is it, the greatest prey of all is man? Or you know, the most dangerous,
the most dangerous game.
Something of all is man. Dangerous game, there you go.
Speaking of stories, that's another good one. The scene where the train goes by on fire. Very creepy, very cool, but I don't buy it. You hit a train that hard that it's on fire, but it's also still on the rails? And that they're...
I think...
I mean, maybe it's just target practice. They're going after something as minor as a passenger train. There's an entire town sitting here all lit up, and the aliens are like, ah. Bah.
Hey, Glorg, hit that train. I don't know if it was supposed to be funny, but everyone just stands there. The train on fire goes by, and they all kind of look at it, and then keep going.
I think...
You know, at this point, they're so used to...
They're so shell-shocked. Yeah, I think that got a laugh in the theater. I think I laughed because it, sure, with all that we've seen today, that train's on fire. I just can't get up off a lot of emotion about that.
Well, that Blues Brother line about trains where, you know, so many trains are going by the apartment window in that beginning scene is like, hey, man, how many trains go by here? Oh, so many you won't even notice.
Right.
You know, there's so much destruction all around them that even a train on fire. Yeah, it's a train on fire.
We
I just saw
even,
Manhattan eaten today.
We don't even care. So. There's Nitz dealing with the ferry. The biggest thing for me is why they bother, the aliens bother overturning it when up till now they've just been disintegrating everything. They're
and
getting
why
bored.
Did they have to sneak under the water?
I don't know why.
It's like, oh, we're going to surprise these ones. Why do you feel... if I'm going to kill... If, like, the description is made, there's no more a contest between us and them as there is between man and maggots. If there's a bunch of maggots on the floor, I'm not going to sneak up on them. I'm just going to go take care of business. Why is this alien sneaking up on this ferry under the water?
I think they're bored. They're just like, oh, you know, I know exactly what it is. This particular alien was like, okay, so my job is to take out the ferry, and if I do it quickly, I'll have to go back to mowing down people, disintegrating them one at a time. I'm getting so sick of that. I'm going to have fun with this and make it last a while longer. More than an hour into the movie, we got all these military vehicles. It's nice that they're EMP-proof, that they get to keep moving, even though the aliens don't. And then, again, another...
They keep solenoid, boxes of solenoids in the back.
Again, another evocative, a very striking shot, these Humvees on fire coming over the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're coming over the hill. That means there's somebody still in there pressing their foot on the accelerator. That's some dedication, really. I figure if I'm on fire, I'm not going to bother, you know, well, the captain said go over the hill, and by thunder, I'm going over it. Okay, and so I said earlier that I'd get to this. At 1 hour, 10 minutes, 10 seconds, Ray has tried to stop Robbie, who's like, I'm going to get in there. I want to fight this war. I want to whatever stupid thing he says. So Robbie runs off over the hill. We hear an explosion. We see the whole horizon light up. And, Robbie's dead. I mean, I'd say it's disagree with me if you want, but I'm pretty sure the idea that Senor Spielbergo had at that point was for us to think Robbie is dead, right?
And the army.
So I admit I mourned a little bit for Robbie. I wasn't that attached to him, but it's like, oh man, poor Ray. And we'll come back to that. Let's see. Oh, and then there's the whole scene with Ray and Rachel and the creepy shotgun man. This is
Tim Robbins.
And this is Tim Robbins puts in a great performance as a really creepy guy. I have to actually laugh at myself here. At 1 hour, 13 minutes, 17 seconds, I gave Ray a lot of crap for not being able to remember any lullaby, and so singing Little Deuce Coop to his daughter to try to calm her down. But that was before I was a father. I now have a 13-month-old, and I regularly sing to him, and I cannot remember an actual lullaby to save my life. I sing him Broadway show tunes. I make stuff up. I sing pop songs. I don't think I've ever sung Little Deuce Coop to him, but I take it back that I gave Ray all that crap about not being able to think of anything else.
Yeah. It's interesting. I made a comment with a friend of mine about that scene, about how I thought it was funny. And, her family experience made that scene not quite as funny. So, yeah, it's interesting how life experience informs how you watch these movies.
Yeah, and it was hard for me to watch this movie considering what happened to my own great-uncle when the aliens attacked Denver back in the 80s.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But I promised myself I wouldn't talk about it on this podcast. Let's just say I don't have a great-uncle anymore and leave it at that. And, I guess they tried to sort of go with the book. I don't remember anything in the book about a giant snake-like eye leering around a basement. That seemed more like a nod to the Abyss movie than anything.
Why is he so fascinated with Tim Robbins' basement? The eye thing comes in once, looks around at everything, and then the two alien dudes come down, and they're drinking the water and spinning the bicycle tire, and then the big eye comes down again. What is so fascinating about Tim Robbins' basement?
They even pass around a photo that they find. It's not like it's a book on farming. Why do you care about looking at the picture of this person?
Well, I mean, maybe they're archiving for anthropological reasons. I don't know, but they're really interested in Tim Robbins' basement.
I also did point, I noticed that it's interesting that every alien has to have a huge head. Not only this movie, but also Independence Day and Aliens and Monsters vs. Aliens and Megamind and so on and so forth. Everything except, wow, I just flashed on the Super Mario Brothers movie, but those weren't aliens. Those were those were reanimated prehistoric dinosaurs. You know, we're going to keep moving.
Well, isn't the implication that the big head is, you know, they're smarter than us, but then they also transcended the need for a strong physical body and...
Blah, blah, blah. They got big heads, yeah. And this cellar that they're hiding in, you know, if a dog had come down into the cellar looking for the humans, would they have been able to hide? No, because the dog has a sense of smell. It's really lucky that the only thing these aliens have going for them is this giant silver eyeball, that they don't have a sense of smell or hearing. They don't see infrared.
But a giant silver eyeball that is pretty vain, because they hide behind a mirror and it's fascinated by its own reflection
looking at itself
for a couple of minutes.
Uh-huh. And, So, the guy with the shotgun, the crazy Tim Robbins character, just won't shut up, and Ray has to shut him up so that he and his daughter survive. And it's like, thank you, movie. I really needed to see this scene. But this is what, it happens so often in movies. Now, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, if this is me, and I have to go do something and leave my child behind, and she's got... You know, she's waiting for me to come back. As soon as I can, I'm going to be like, hey, it's me. Hey, it's me. Hey, it's me. Because I don't want to scare her. But no, Ray just suddenly, ta-da! They do this, of course, so that we have the moment of tension of, oh, who was it that survived the fight? Is it Tim Robbins going to come and mess with Dakota Fanning? And of course it's Ray, but why doesn't he say something?
I like that you're brushing over murder to how he reintroduces himself to his daughter.
I don't even want to talk about that. I just, why, Spielberg, why?
Yeah.
And they go
to another basement or something. If Tim's being too loud, I'm sure there's, you know, other farmhouses. You can go hide out in their basements.
Yeah.
You don't need to watch Tim Robbins.
Oh, I think he did. And a few minutes later, we see the alien collector baskets with all these people sitting in them. It's maybe this isn't a nit, because they've been through a lot today, and people, especially when you get a bunch of them together, tend to kind of act like cattle. I'll admit that, but it seems like somebody could fit through the openings in the basket. I would think somebody would be trying to escape, but no, they're all just sitting there ready to be, you know, alien treats. But it's also, it's amazing, it's that Ray, I think the military ought to hire him as an intelligence specialist, because it's him and not the soldier in the basket who manages to get an alien to suck up some grenades. It's him and not any of the soldiers who notices that the birds are picking at the alien, therefore the shields are down. So
that's what they get for not being Tom Cruise.
And earlier, I didn't even mention it, it was him and his family that saw the tripod coming towards the town while all the soldiers are just kind of standing around, you know, polishing their guns, if you will. Or their rifles anyway. Family podcast.
My wife and I were over at her family's house today, and they were playing a video game about World War I, and all of the characters that you could be were very attractive men. So, you know, she made the comment that in order to fight in World War I, you had to be extremely handsome. So, you know, apparently that combat method is what is used here in War of the Worlds 2. The mildly attractive army officer is no Tom Cruise, so he doesn't get to take the grenades out.
I guess. And there's a lot of, boy, isn't it lucky. It's lucky. It's kind of weird that because the aliens are dead, the shields are down on their ships. It seems like the shields would be operative regardless of whether there was anyone inside, but maybe it's tied to the aliens' heartbeat. And
yeah, they slumped on the console.
It's nice of the craft that fell over to open by itself, because I could just see, well, we don't know what happened because we can't get this darn thing open, but we think they're dead. And I'm wrapping up. I'm getting to the last two in the movie, the last one especially. I'm still mad at Spielberg about. Before I do, anything that I've skipped over, anything...
Well, when the doors opened up and all that orange sludge came out, my wife said, oh, they were all sick. Is that their diarrhea and birth? I think I was very proud of her for that observation.
Thank God smell-o-vision never became a thing. So I don't even want to know what they would have thought that was supposed to smell like. Well, here we are near the end of the movie. It's amazing that these aliens that have been destroying everything up until now, apparently they like old brownstones, because the entire block where Grandma lives is completely untouched. It's just, how lucky are they? But then the last nit I have, we've seen Robbie go over the hill. We saw the explosion. The producers, the director, everybody said, okay, mourn him. He is dead. 1 hour, 47 minutes, 58 seconds. Robbie runs out of the house? How in the name of all that is holy did he survive to the end of this movie?
Right.
It is... I can't swallow it. I tried to. I just can't. It's stuck halfway down. And what are you going to do?
Well, he would have had to say, I'm going to charge over hill to attack these aliens. He must have gotten to the top of the hill, saw everything get carpet bombed, and be like, nope. And then turn around and ran to Boston.
Right. He didn't run back to his dad. He didn't get help anywhere near. He's like, I can make it to Boston. They'll find me eventually.
Yeah. So, anyways.
Yeah, it was such a cop-out. Well, this has been fun. I far prefer going through a movie with company like this.
Can I say one thing in War of the Worlds defense?
Please do.
So, 2005, went through a rough breakup, and a very dear friend of mine said, okay, we're going to go see a movie.
Yeah.
And then after that movie... we're going to go to the library with our sketchbooks, and we're going to pretend like we're concept artists, and we're going to draw as if we were drawing alien designs for this movie.
That's a good friend right there.
And it was a wonderful afternoon. It got me out of my head, and it was just such a wonderful thing for me. And in true Paul Harvey fashion, and that friend turned out to be my wife. And now you know the rest of the story.
That
so War of the Worlds, despite its many nits worthy to pick, has that distinction of being a fun afternoon between me and a friend who later became my wife.
Absolutely. That is not only a good story, but the best possible way I could think of to pull an end to this podcast. So thank you, Adam Nesheim, for joining us, me and us. Oh, I was doing so well on making sense, and then my brain fell out.
It's been a pleasure, sir. Thank you for inviting me.
For those that are enjoying themselves and want to come back in a fortnight, I will be looking at The Lost World, Jurassic Park 2, which is a movie I've seen far more times than I've seen War of the Worlds, because I actually enjoyed it. Although when it came out and I heard, Tyrannosaurus Rex in San Diego, I was like, I'm not buying that. I buy it. I completely buy it. I found things to nitpick about it, but I buy it. But in the meantime, talk to me.
Well, with that one, I didn't realize that Toby from The West Wing is, what's his name, Stan in that movie? I can't remember the balding guy.
Oh, yeah.
Gets chomped early.
I think when I started to watch The West Wing, I was like, where have I seen him at? And looked it up on IMDb. But yeah, it's funny to see people and go, oh my gosh, they were this in that. But in the meantime, gentle listeners, and Adam yourself, own your stage, please, whatever stage that might happen
thanks,
to be.
Man.
And we will see you when we see you.